We've been studying very minutely, very scrutinizingly, Krishna lifting up Govardhan Hill, and he did it. He lifted up Govardhan Hill, he saved the residents of Vrindavan. And now we're moving on to a new chapter, which is, what was Indra's reaction? Well, how did he feel after he realized what he did? So this chapter is chapter 27. It's called Lord Indra and Mother Sarabhi Offer Prayers. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chandram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayat Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. So here's the chapter summary. We're going to read the chapter summary. So it's a little bit long reading, so you have to pay attention, okay? That's just to tune you in. This chapter describes how Sarabhi Kau and Indra, having seen the amazing power of Lord Krishna, performed a bathing ceremony for him. Ashamed of having attacked Vrindavan with a violent storm, Indra secretly came before Lord Krishna, offered obeisances, and praised him. Indra stated that although Sri Krishna is never caught up in the current of material illusion, which is born of ignorance, he nevertheless accepts a human-like body and performs various activities to establish religious principles and chastise the wicked. By this means, he crushes the false prestige of those who presume themselves great controllers. I'm just going to read that sentence again, because that's the summary of the whole chapter. And it's actually the summary of all of our sojourn through the material world. It really is. Get back to that sentence. By this means, he crushes the false prestige of those who presume themselves great controllers. Indra went on to declare that Krishna is the Father, Guru, and Lord of all living entities, and that in the form of time, he is the agent of their punishment. There's a lot behind that sentence too. Satisfied with Indra's prayers, Krishna told him that he had stopped the Indra Yagya so that Indra, puffed up as he was with false pride, would remember the Lord. Persons intoxicated by material opulence never see him standing before them with the rod of punishment in his hand. Therefore, if the Lord desires the actual good fortune of some person, he brings him down from his position of opulence. Lord Krishna ordered Indra to return to his proper position in heaven and to serve there without egotism. Indra, along with the cow Sarabhi, then performed a bathing ceremony for Krishna using the water of the heavenly Ganges and the milk of Mother Sarabhi. Indra and the cow took this opportunity to bestow upon the Lord the name Govinda, and the demigods showered flowers and recited various prayers. So now when you hear the name of Govinda, you can think of Indra and Go. Go is what? Go is cow. So Krishna is the Lord of the cows, and also Govinda means senses. And something else. What's the other one? We'll have to stay tuned to the end of the chapter to know for sure. In the meantime, we'll do text one. Shri Sukha Uvacha. Shri Sukha Uvacha. Govardhane Drite Shaile. Asharad Rakshite Raje. Asharad Rakshite Vraje Golokad Avrajat Krishnam Golokad Avrajat Krishnam Surabhi Chakra Evacha So just one little thing. It's always good to try to repeat the Sanskrit, even though you might not repeat it perfectly, but you just keep trying and you'll learn really easy. So when we're chanting like this all together, even if somebody makes a mistake, it's okay. Just keep chanting, okay? So let's hear you chant a little louder, if it's possible, okay? Shri Sukhu Vacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Asharad Rakshite Vraje, Golokada Vrajat Krishnam, Surabhi Shakra Evacha, Shri Sukhu Vacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Asharad Rakshite Vraje, Golokada Vrajat Krishnam, Surabhi Shakra Evacha. Please chant.
Shri Sukha Uvacha.
Golokada Vrajat Krishnam. Surabhi Shakra Evacha. Shri Sukha Vacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Aksharad Rakshite Vraje, Goloka Avrajat Krishnam, Shurabhi Shakra Evacha.
Ladies?
Shri Shuka Uvacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Asharad Rakshite Vraje, Golokada Vrajat Krishnam, Shurabhi Shakra Evacha, Shri Shuka Uvacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Aksharad Rakshite Vraje, Golokada Vrajat Krishnam, Surabhi Chakra Evacha.
Do some of our mothers of our students who don't usually get to chant, would they like to chant? Some of the mothers, student mothers?
Shri Sukha Uvacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Aksharad Rakshite Vraje, Golokada Vrajat Krishnam, Surabhi Shakra Evacha.
Students?
Shri Sukha Uvacha, Govardhane Drite Shaile, Aksharad Rajite Shaile, Govardhane Drite Krishna, Surabhi Shakra Evacha.
Thank you, that was very nice. Shri Sukha Uvacha. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, Govardhane, Govardhan, Drite, having been held, Shaile, the hill, Asharat, from the rainfall, Rakshite, having been protected, Vraje, Vraja, Golokat, from the planet of the cows, Avrajat came, Krishnam to Krishna, Surabhi, Mother Surabhi, Shakra, Indra, Eva, also, Cha, and. translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Sukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Vraj from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Want to repeat that together? Can we do it together? It's a little hard when we do it together, but try to all stay together. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Vraj from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cow, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Purport. The word Golokat here indicates the material planet called Goloka, which is filled with exceptional cows. Surabhi went joyfully to see Lord Krishna, but Indra went fearfully. As indicated in this verse, Lord Krishna had adopted extraordinary measures to protect his Vrindavan associates from Indra's obnoxious and offensive attack. Certainly Indra was ashamed and also very nervous about his future. Having acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma, who then ordered him to take along Surabhi from the material Goloka planet and go see Krishna. Oma jinatimanandasya jinatimanandasya chaksu imitam jina tasmai shri gurudevaha. So what's happening here is how Mother Surabhi and King Indra are now going forward to see Krishna and offer prayers. If we think about that, it's quite extraordinary. We can say it really quick. Oh, Surabhi and Indra went to see Krishna. But what does that mean? Let's look at Indra's position. Indra's position as a demigod. What's his position? He's the king of all the heavenly planets. He's the king. That's a very powerful position. Sometimes when the demigods are disturbed by the demons, when the demons come and attack the demigods and they're having a hard time, the demigods all come together to go to see Indra for protection. Indra has a very coveted position. It's a position. Coveted means it's a position that everybody else wants, or many people want. They want his power. He's very powerful, very opulent. He has all the money that he could ever want to have. He has all the power. He has all the wealth. He has a lot of wealth, a lot of strength, a lot of position, a lot of influence. And yet, he was feeling so ashamed and so fearful, he didn't know what to do. And here he is coming with Surabhi. And what form does Surabhi have? Who's Surabhi? She's a cow. So Indra is begging Surabhi. He's going, this big king of heaven. Now let's, I don't want to go too fast. So Indra's position is such that anybody who gets any power, like any demons oftentimes, what do they want? They want to try to conquer Indra so they can have his position, just like Bali Maharaj. When Bali Maharaj was in more of a demoniac mood and he got a little power, what did he do? He was headed right towards King Indra's planet and position. He wanted to kick him out of his position and take his position. So many times Indra's there and shown to be a great powerful ruler, but he in his fearfulness, he's taking shelter of Surabhi the cow. It's quite an amazing thing when you think of it, because and even that wasn't his first thought what to do. He was so bewildered afterwards when he finally realized, I'm not more powerful than Krishna. Krishna is more powerful than me. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh my God, I forgot. I forgot that. I thought I could show him something. I thought I could. But not only that, but he didn't just try to show him something. What did he try to do? How severe was it? He made a plan to try to kill everybody that Krishna loves in Vrindavan, including all the cows. That was his plan. That was pretty drastic. How's that for? That was a pretty drastic plan. Just like, let's say that you're in school. This is just hypothetical. I don't want to give you any ideas. But let's just say you're in school and there's somebody who is kind of bothering you. Somebody. And they kind of bother you a lot. So you take a little frog or a lizard or a spider and you put it on their desk or in their lunch bag or blah, blah, blah. So, you know, some little place, right? Just so that they'll get disturbed. And you just want to see what their reaction is. So was that what like Indra did? No, he didn't even do that. He did something way more serious. It was like it was just like a person who has a job, right? Somebody has a job and there's the boss and he doesn't like his boss. But what does he do? He doesn't decide to put a frog on his boss desk. He decides to get a person, I won't pick you as the person, to try to go and kill the boss. But the plan doesn't work. So how do you think he would feel when the boss knows this person just made a plan to kill me and all my friends? How do you think the boss would react? It would be pretty amazing if the person still kept his job. That would be one thing that would be amazing. It would be pretty amazing if the person was still had any friendship or any mercy or any feelings of towards him. So if we compare, like, for here in this purport, it explains that because Indra acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma. He didn't know what to do. So Brahma, what's Brahma's position? Brahma's position is that he's the father, he's the guru, he's the head of all the demigods. He's the head of all the demigods. He's the guru, the teacher. So Indra, he's an administrator. He's the king. But Brahma's the grandfather, Pitamaha. He's the leader. So Indra goes to Brahma and he says, "What should I do? I just offended Krishna. What should I do?" And Lord Brahma says, "Well, don't do what I did. Don't do what I did, because after Brahma..." Now, what is he saying that for? Because Brahma, remember, he's just a few chapters ago, before you were coming to class, Brahma stole the cows and the cowherd boys because he was trying to, you know, test Krishna. He just stole them. He just hid them, put them in a cave. And so, but after he hid them, and after he realized, oh, Krishna is more powerful than me, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm his servant, Brahma came forward and offered his prayers, and all four of his heads, somehow or other, touched the ground, and he offered his prayers. And you know what Krishna's response was to Brahma's prayers? This was his response. He didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. At least that's recorded that I know. Okay. You know, he didn't say anything. He forgave him, and etc. So Brahma thought, what was Brahma's response to that? I better get out of here. I know this isn't for me. I should, you know, just so. So when Indra, so Brahma's activities could be compared to, okay, this is the total Vanda example, so don't quote it as if it comes from scripture, okay? As if a person put a frog on somebody's desk. It's a trick, it's a bother, but it's not malicious. It's not malicious. Like, so Indra comes to Brahma, and he, after his response, after his awakening, he says, "What should I do?" Lord Brahma says, "Don't do what I do. Don't go by yourself. Don't go by yourself to see Krishna. But take somebody who Krishna loves. Take somebody who Krishna loves and have that person act or ask forgiveness on your behalf." So that's why he took Surabhi, because Krishna loves the cows. So he took Surabhi because when Krishna would see Surabhi, immediately he would feel affection. Immediately he would feel affection. And so Surabhi begging forgiveness on Indra's behalf would... make this, placate the situation, would pacify the situation, would soothe the situation, any irregularities. And then Indra could offer his prayers very nicely, which he did, which you'll hear all about in the upcoming verses. And you'll hear the prayers of Sarabhi. One thing that Sarabhi says, which is not recorded in the Bhagavatam, but it's recorded by Kavi Kandapur in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. One of the first things she says, see this person standing behind me? Because Indra was afraid. He didn't come first. He had Sarabhi go first. He said, see this person? She said, see this person standing behind me? He's very ashamed. And he's come to ask for your forgiveness. Intoxicated by the wine of his own false ego, he has committed a great offense. That's a big phrase there. But what it means is just what was said here in the purport, in the chapter summary. How the living entity, illusioned by a concept of pride, of self-importance, they're thinking, what are they thinking? They're thinking so many things to the extent of, I'm better than you, I'm better than all of you, I'm better than everyone, I'm this, I'm the most powerful, I'm the most important, I can do this the best, so many things, I. That's a slight symptom of somebody who's intoxicated in illusion by their false sense of prestige. Because what is it immediately a symptom of? It's immediately a symptom of forgetfulness of who we really are. Who are we really? We're not this body. You've heard that many times, and you'll hear it many more times in the sojourn of your life. But when you hear it, when you really see how to apply it in so many ways, the external covering of the body, whether it's tall or handsome or short and a little chubbier or this or that or smarter or more agile or this or that, so many different varieties of things, that's not who you are. You and I, thank you, Krishna, for reminding me, that we are just teeny, weeny, 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 weeny parts of Krishna. Krishna's, and when we forget that position, there's other aspects of that, that Krishna really loves us, and he really loved Indra too. That's why he didn't kick Indra out. Even though he made different offenses at different times, Krishna's love for the living entities never ceases. No matter how one might, don't think that you've done something too extremely bad and Krishna's never going to forgive you. He will. He's just waiting for us to turn to him. So what I wanted to do is talk more, but are you still leaving at 8:30, right? So what I really would like to do is, up to this point, ask if the students have any questions, because they never get a chance to ask any questions, because you leave before questions come. So don't be too shy. But do you have any questions? Did you hear when you read, when I was reading? Did you think, what does that mean? Or did you hear something? Or would you like to add something? Here's your chance. Or maybe you can ask your teacher that she didn't get a question. If you're too shy. Yes, Sheena. That's great question. Sheena's question was, why did Sarabhi agree to go? Because you would think, right? Here it is, Indra just tried to kill all of her relatives, right? So how would she be feeling very favorable? That's a very good question. Thanks. She did it because she loved Krishna, and she wanted to see Krishna. That's why she did it. She loved Krishna, and she knew that was stronger than her dislike for the situation that Indra just did. Good question, thanks. Any other questions? The first question is always the hardest. Sukhita?
When I was reading it, I went secretly.
Fearfully. Oh, he went secretly. Yes, yeah.
In the purport, it talked about he was fearful. So at first I was thinking that secretly meant that, you know, because of his false ego, he... maybe you couldn't do it in front of a lot of people, but...
Exactly. Pundarik Prabhu just talked a little bit about that yesterday. how Krishna had made that arrangement too. Krishna very kindly arranged, because he was so intoxicated and thinking of his importance, he wouldn't have been able to do it in front of the whole class or the whole Raj or the whole in front of all the demigods. So Krishna had made an arrangement that shortly after Govardhan Hill was put down, he went out for a walk. So Krishna was by himself, more or less. And that arranged, he was checking to see if there was any damage to Govardhan Hill from the thunderbolts. Well, of course, there wasn't any, but he was giving that opportunity to be away from the crowd so that Indra could come and approach first with Surabhi. So in that sense, it meant secretly. And he was also fearful because he was worried about his job. He was fearful that, I just tried to kill my boss, you know, more or less, you know. How am I going to keep this job? But Krishna is so kind. Any other questions from the school? Yes, Prabhu. How long were the villages under the hill? 7 days. Dharma says 7 days. Thanks. 7 days they were under the hill. And you know what happened when Krishna put the hill down? So he, when the sun came out and all the rains dried up, Krishna said, okay, you can go out now. And they didn't really want to go out. Why? Because Krishna was still under the hill. He said, no, you got to go out. So they all kind of went out. But all the cows stayed under the hill. They wouldn't go out. So then Krishna had to kind of like talk to the cows, because he knows how to do that. And he said, okay, go out and you just wait outside and then I'll come. So they went out and then they ran back in because Krishna was still under the hill. He said, no, you have to go out again. And then he said, okay, you put down the hill exactly in the same position. And then he went out, and then all the cows and all the villagers hugged him a lot. Karuna. Oh, that's too scary. Yeah, I'll repeat it, but gradually. Karuna's question is that I said that Indra was begging Surabhi cow to come and to see Krishna, and how was he doing that? Well, like this. Come and help me. No, I really don't know the exact answer, but you could say, he was very heartfelt. You know when somebody makes a mistake and they're asking for forgiveness, you might not say the right words. You might not say, oh, I'm sorry, because, you know, you might not say the right words. But if your heart is there, then that's the message that gets across, the heart. So I have lots of experience making mistakes and offending people. Some people used to think that I used to chant Hare Krishna when I was at temple present, but my mantra used to be, I'm sorry, Prabhu. I'm sorry, Prabhu. I'm sorry, Prabhu. Anyway, Hare Mo. So what was I going to say about that? No, sometimes people think you need the right words, but actually what you need is the right heart, the right attitude, the right desire. So I don't know of, I haven't heard of the prayers or how he did it, but it is explained how she was actually quite glad, Subrahmi was quite glad to go, because she saw the benefit of going to see Krishna, and she could also see Indra's repentance. You know, there is another remarkable story, incident of somebody begging forgiveness, and they really meant it at the time that they did it, and the person really forgave them, and then the person went on to commit more and more atrocious activities. Can anybody think from that side of the room? Hold on, we'll get to you if we need to. From this side, from the school, can anybody think who I might be talking to? It has directly to do with Krishna's appearance. Somebody, Hari, is that you? Hari? Kamsa. Thank you. Haridas. Kamsa, right. And can you briefly remind us when he did that? Is that okay? Can I ask that? How he did it? Kamsa? When? Very good. Couldn't hear too much, but I heard Vasudev, so I knew that you were...
Vasudev had his first child, and then he came back.
Okay. That's true. Vasudev did go back. But the part, and you're right in the exact spot, but the part that I'm talking about is after Kamsa had killed all of Devaki's six children, and he came and he went, came to kill the sixth one, and she flew up in her hand, which one is seven. Seventh one, she flew up, and then she said, the child whom you seek is born elsewhere, and then Kamsa said, oh, what have I done? And then he went to Devaki and he said, I'm so sorry for having done all of this. And you know what Devaki's reaction was? Seven children or so, around that, quite a few children, were killed by her brother right in front of her face, right as they were born. And she forgave him because he asked for forgiveness. That's like, don't ask me too many questions about that. Okay, Jack, you got it. But she did because she was such an exalted personality. Anyway, any other questions, or is your time up? I'm seeing teacher looks. Is there a question back there? Yes? You're stretching. Okay, stretching. Okay, thank you very much for your kind attention, class. If you'd like to stay, if you can't stay, please do. Now the challenge is to go back to the class. Okay. One of the points that Srila Prabhupada's disciples are making, or even this story is making, how Surabhi and Indra, they're seeking mercy. Hold on. So Indra, particularly, Indra's bewildered how to become forgiven for the offense that he's made. So he seeks shelter of the guru, his guru. Brahma, in that sense, in this sense, is a guru. And he gives him very sagacious advice. And one of the main points is that if we're in a bewildering situation, we have to, the only way is to approach the guru or the Vaishnavas, the superior persons. That's one of the prime lessons in this pastime. And another, there's an interesting little story that Srila Sachinandana Maharaj gives in this regard. In regard to what is the Lord's primary or constant activity? What's his constant activity? What is he constantly doing? So there was this story, once there was this great king, and he had his ministers who helped him rule the kingdom. But he was not a very even-keeled person. He had he was potent, but also a little despotic, a little bit. So he one day asked one of his ministers, what is God's constant duty? What is his constant activity? And the minister thought for a minute, and he didn't know what exactly to respond, because he knew that if he said something wrong, he would be killed. And if he said something that the king didn't like, he'd also be killed. So he's a little hesitant to speak, plus he didn't know so much. So what he was able to say was, oh, my dear king, we have so many pundits in this kingdom. This is a question for the pundits. So the king said, yes, you're right. So he went and he asked his chief pundit, his chief priest, what is the Lord's constant activity? And the pundit also had a similar reaction. Oh my Lord, if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to be killed. You know, because if I say it's creation, he's not always creating. What am I going to say? He said, I need some time to look in the scriptures. So he said, okay. Come back in a week, it's no problem. And so that the time was set, and the pundit went to look in the scriptures, but he happened to keep walking. He kept walking right outside the jurisdiction of the kingdom because he didn't know the answer, and he didn't know how to get out of the tight situation that he was in. But as he was leaving the kingdom, he came across one of his disciples who happened to be a simple cow herd, sheep herd or something, a simple animal. Take care of her, anyway. So the person said, oh, my dear Guruji, where are you going? He said, I'm leaving the kingdom. He said, why? What's happening? So the king has asked me this question, what's the Lord's constant activity? And I don't know the answer. And so I'm leaving to save, I don't know if he said to save my life, but anyway. So the simple cowherd man said, oh, but Guru, I can go on your behalf. He said, I know the answer. And the Guru was very surprised. Well, if you want to, that would be really nice. So the cowherd man goes to the kingdom. He goes to the king, and he said, I know the Lord's constant activity. And the king, sitting on his throne, looking at the cowherd man, was a little puzzled. How is it possible? But the cowherd man said, I know the answer, and I can give you the answer. But in order to give you the answer properly, the mood has to be proper. Therefore, you have to come sit here, and I have to go sit there on the exalted position, because he's asking him something. He's the teacher. He's the spiritual master. So the spiritual master, the teacher, sits in an elevated position, not above, not, oh, tell me something. No, they have to ask. The proper attitude of supplication has to be there. So the king was a little stumped there, but he did. He had to get off his throne, and the simple cowherd man with his simple little clothes got up on the throne, and he said, this is the Lord's constant activity, to humble the proud. This is the Lord's constant activity, to humble the proud. And this is what's alluded to here in these chapter summary. He says, because Sri Krishna is never caught up in the current of material illusion which is born of ignorance. Ignorance meaning forgetting our real position. He nevertheless accepts a human-like body and performs various activities to establish religious principles and chastise the wicked. By this means, he crushes the false prestige of those who presume themselves great controllers. So this is the Lord's constant activity. And if you take a look at it, it's not that, oh, the Lord is doing it for others, for the President of the United States, for the mayor, for the great this, for the great that. He's doing it for everyone. He's doing it for you and me also. And sometimes it comes in ways, it's so easy to see someone else's problems or difficulties or shortcomings. But the Lord is so kind that he's very kindly pointing out to us what our own shortcomings are. And sometimes we don't get it. We don't pass the test, or we don't understand quite what the question is. So guess what? You get it again. Until you get it, until you really understand. Oh, you mean, oh, I'm not as great as I thought I was? I thought it was they weren't as great as they thought. No. Me. Oh, me. And then the false ego kind of takes its humble position for a few seconds, and then pops up again. Oh, but in this case, oh, yes, yes, down. And then, so what's the solution? Janata pisani chena parori gosahishuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Unless we come, and that's why Lord Chaitanya, he's not hammering, but I'm saying, he's hammering that point to our big false egos, to my big false ego, which quite hasn't learned the lesson yet, that unless you feel yourself lower than the straw and the street, more humble than the blade of grass. If I would have that mentality, then I wouldn't have had that fight yesterday that I had in the pujari room with one person. You know, because I'm thinking, oh, it should be this way. No, it should be Krishna's making a perfect arrangement. Humbler than a blade of grass. Easy to say, huh? Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for giving us all these wonderful opportunities to remind ourselves of what our real position is. So that's some thoughts on that. Hare Krishna, any comments or questions or corrections? Hari Parayan Prabhu. He's right there. Oh, this is Hari Parayan.
So we hear from the Durvasamani pastime that unless Durvasamani Muni asked for forgiveness from Ambarish Maharaj, he would not be forgiven. But here, the cowherd men, women, cows, they're going to be murdered by Indra, yet Krishna forgives him in secret. How did that work? He didn't ask for the forgiveness of the Vrajavasis.
That's another great question. Pundarik, you have any thoughts on that? Pastime. That's a great answer, too. It's a pastime, Prabhu. Sorry. Krishna's pastime. Because ultimately, pastime. That's where I'm going to stop there. But it did remind me of another point regarding the power of bhakti, okay? Because what was it, like, for example, Ravana. Ravana, so powerful, right? Controlled the whole universe just by the raising of his eyebrows, the demigods would shake, right? So, but he tried with all his power and all his accumulated strength to harm Prahlad, to kill Prahlad. And Prahlad, there he was, a little bit bigger than that, 5-year-old boy. What power did that 5-year-old boy have in relation to Hiranyakashipu? He didn't have anything. But what did he have? He had love for Krishna. And that love for Krishna, that's what protected him. Krishna protected him. He wouldn't let anything happen to Prahlad. And therefore, those residents of Vrindavan, they had love for... what weapons could they do to fight against Indra's... what could they do? Build sandbags and this and that, so they could fight. Nothing. They just loved Krishna. Krishna took care of it. That's the power of bhakti. So whatever we do in our life, we should keep that as our focus. Keep our focus on trying to develop a love for Krishna, watering the root. Begavati has the microphone, and then Mathur is next.
Okay. Hare Krishna. I just wanted to comment. What you said at the end reminded me of a description I heard of the nature of Vrindavan, is that Radharani is bringing each of us a mirror for us to look in and see what we need to work on. But if we don't look at it, she shows it to everyone else.
Oh.
So I think Prabhupada has made all these little outposts of Vrindavan act in a similar way.
Thanks. Mathura?
From the pastime, I was reminded of something kind of mundane in this material world, but I used to be a fan of Mike Tyson, fighter, and he used to go in the ring and he used to be able to just knock anybody out. And I remember in his beginning days, he used to actually help the fighters that he'd knock out up. He was respectful. And then as he won more and more matches and he was like invincible. He said he started drinking, he was sleeping with every woman he wanted, he was taking all kinds of intoxication. He would actually go to the fights drunk. He was so intoxicated.
What that he would fight in?
He would fight in the ring drunk eventually. And he said he thought he was God. He said, I thought I was God. And then he started losing. So I observe myself do this every day. In little ways. People So my questions too is how can I protect myself from falling into that? And should I praise other devotees for things they do, because I feel like when other devotees praise me, it's a test for me to fall into that pride or to really see, oh, this is Krishna.
Good question. So first part of the question is, what should I do to protect myself? Well, one thing is when the moment of awareness, even if it's a short moment of awareness of our real position, dawns upon us, when we realize, oh, I'm in total illusion, oh, I just acted offensively, or oh, I just, whatever, that was the result of my ego. When that little bit of opening of consciousness comes through, the light shines through our dense darkness, offer a sincere prayer. Krishna, please help me. Thank you for showing me that. Help me to keep me on the track. A sincere prayer from the heart and those moments of awareness they're very potent. They'll keep them coming. Then, of course, the other thing is that don't think that you're alone in that position. This is all of our positions. And what we do every day in our process of sadhana, this chanting, this, these, our japa, that'll protect you. Now, it doesn't mean that every mantra that you chant, every round that you chant will be in that consciousness, but that's like the medicine of it. So keep doing what you're doing in the sense of following the process of sadhana bhakti, chanting, following the rules and regulations to the best of your ability, and gradually, everything will come. So other people might have other things that they would like to add to that, but to answer the second part, if I can remember, hold on. What was the second part? What to do? Oh, praise. Oh, yeah, that's a really good question, too. Should I praise other devotees? Because when I get praised myself, I think it's a little test. And the answer is a really emphatic yes, we should praise other devotees. In fact, we should praise other devotees sincerely, because that's one of our difficulties. One of our difficulties, my difficulties, is seeing my good qualities and not seeing anybody else's good qualities. So look for the good qualities in others. Praise the others in a sincere way, not in a over-the-top way. Oh, Prabhu, you should be the founder, you should be the acharya, whatever, you're doing a great job, keep it up, like that. Over-the-top is false flattery. That's sort of like inimical, But encouraging. We should always learn how to try to speak encouraging. And how they take it, Krishna will sort it out. But our tendency is not to want to praise anyone. So to overcome that, it's better to do that. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
I was remembering Jayananda was once asked a similar question like that. And he says it's just natural for people to do that, because after you're a devotee for a little while, you start developing devotional qualities. And
you do that meaning to praise others?
When someone praises you, how do you take the praise it contaminating your consciousness and falling into pride from it? So he says it's just natural, people are going to do it. And I think it's also, in Dhruva Maharaj, when he came back, there was some mention about that. And for myself, I remembered a game called Hot Potato when you're a little kid. Did you ever...
Hot Potato.
You know Hot Potato? They throw you... I guess when you take them out of the oven, they're very warm. So you throw them to somebody. It was probably started as kind of a joke. Here, catch. And then as soon as you get the Hot Potato, what do you do with it?
Pass it on.
Yeah, quickly. So... quite honestly, the praise that's coming is because you're repeating some of Prabhupada's words. It's not really, in one sense, you that they're saying. They're saying that you brought up, like if you praise the mailman for bringing you a check in the mail, and you say, oh, you're such a wonderful person for giving me this check, the mailman would just kind of look at you, I'm delivering it. So Prabhupada would use the word peon, I'm a postal peon, that meant I'm delivering a message. So naturally, the message is glorious. So if you're saying that to me, that was Prabhupada's method, that he would say, I'm simply delivering the message. So then you put it in the correct position.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I'll say that to Prabhupada on the altar there, that your mercy, and then he says, well, I'm carrying out the order of Bhaktisiddhanta, so it's Bhaktisiddhanta's mercy. Bhaktisiddhanta, your mercy. And he says, I'm following the six Goswamis. And as six Goswamis, well, we're just following Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda, he said, well, I'm just following Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya said, well, I'm in the mood of Radharani. So where's the follow the mercy trail?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for that. That's a really nice example. Any other comments or questions? Prabhu?
Hare Krishna, thank you for such a nice class. You mentioned being more tolerant than a tree, more humble than a blade of grass. Sometimes, with the work guide or any work, if you do that in the material world, I feel like you're going to get run over and crushed.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you draw the line between... Is there something where people wrong you or others that should not be tolerated? And there's some situations where if you are humble, you're going to get wronged and cheated if you don't stand up when somebody's doing the wrong thing. So where do you draw that line, or is it different depending on your material life and your spiritual life?
Well, all of the above. It's a great question that you could talk for hours on. You know, I remember a class that Dhruva Maharaj, the Buddha, gave here. Because we often have this conception of what humility means. Be humble. And we think it means be stepped on, be a mat, be a doormat, be stepped on. That's humble. Okay, you want to step on me? Sure. Oh, you want to cheat me out of that? That wasn't the proper fee, but that's okay. I'll be humble. I'll take the humble position. You know, it doesn't mean that. So I don't have a simple, quick answer to that that you'd be able to apply in every circumstance. But just the general mood is that it's a process that comes clearer as we make more and more advances. I'm sure Madan Mohan has wonderful little examples and little stories he could tell you that makes it clearer. But we do have that conception, misconception oftentimes, that humble means we never speak up. But if you look at the life of Srila Prabhupada or any great devotee, like you don't think of Hanuman as not being humble. Hanuman was the humble servant of Lord Ram. And then sometimes he was there bending his knee like he is right now. Bending his knee, offering his supplication, his prayers, willing to do any difficult task. But then when we got the difficult task to do, he applied his intelligence how to do it in the most astonishing way. And intensely and ferociously. So one has to keep in mind all the principles. Who am I? Where is my power coming from? How to apply it? There's lots of hands. We're going to go to 9:30. Mathura's was the first hand that I saw. And then we'll go around to Yamaraj and Vegavati.
Just real quick, what comes to me is there's always a balance of power and love. So if we're on too much on the side of love, usually we're sentimental. If we're too much on the side of power, it's coming from ego. So you can see Krishna is full of power and he's full of love, and we're in little parts and parcels. And you see Prabhupada, he acted in so much power at times. He was very powerful.
Thank you.
Even people that weren't even devotees, he'd be very powerful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yamaraj, please.
Thank you for the nice class, Mother. I was thinking when you asked that question, Bhakti Tirtha Swami, when he would, at times, quite often, he would go and go to devotees and have and say, what are some of the things that I'm doing that you don't like? Just criticize me. And so they would tell him, you're chanting, you're always reading where we're chanting, and things like that. And so he would digest those things and try to accommodate his colleagues, more or less. So along the line of your questioning, I was thinking that, okay, so those were his colleagues and his associates, but like people who are like just somebody out in the street or somebody like that, then I think you would have to use some discretion or you know, use some judgment in terms of how you take whatever criticism or things like that. So somebody might say, "But you're a doctor." Somebody might criticize.
Cut you off there. Thank you. And okay. Just go to Vegavati because now it's 9.
All right,
getting
thank
there.
You.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thanks for that contribution. Vegavati?
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I thought of two different examples from the scriptures. One is there's an associate of Lord Nityananda Sri Minikatana Ramdas, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to call on some people and they didn't stand up. And it wasn't out of his own ego, but he knew how close he was to Lord Nityananda. And the fact that when he came in, they didn't stand up meant to him that they were disrespecting Lord Nityananda. So he said, now I've met the second Rama Harshana Sutta. You know, so it's an example of what appears to be pride and false ego is actually a case of his deep humility and his attachment and love for his master, Lord Nityananda.
Mm-hmm.
So things aren't always what they seem.
Yeah, exactly.
And another one that I thought of was from, I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had included this in that Vyasa Pooja address he gave on his own Vyasa Pooja day when he was saying, oh, people may think, who is this pompous person sitting up high getting praise from so many? I think it's in there, this sentence always struck with me that I am prepared to become the most arrogant in the service of my spiritual master. So again, it doesn't, you know, it may appear one way to worldly people. It goes against our typical understanding of what is humility. But in other words, yes, there may be a time for standing up for, you know, devotional principles in an antagonistic situation. But within your heart, it's because you're a humble servant.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So you can see this, the broad subject. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.